Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA podcast, and we have good news to report. The NBA is not going to have a lockout in 2017. We will talk about that in a few minutes here. Before we get underway, just a reminder, you can find us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so be sure to give both the pod's Twitter account and us a follow. You can find us on iTunes as well. Be sure to check us out there. Subscribe, download, and leave a review. We would love to hear any feedback. Also, we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so be sure to check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and their NBA-centric account is at FanRagNBA. With all that said, today, as always, I'm joined by Sarah Chalea. How's it going, Sarah?
It's going all right, Ryan. I know we got some sad news. Just had logging on today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so our third co-host, Morten Jensen, cannot join us today. He is feeling under the weather. I think he partied too hard once he heard that there won't be a lockout next summer. So he will be back with us next time. As Sarah alluded to, we were recording this on Thursday, December 15th. A few minutes before we started recording, the news broke that Craig Sager, longtime Turner Sports reporter, has passed away after his courageous battle with cancer. I mean, I think it's safe to say that the NBA is going to miss his vibrancy and his spirit. I think the thing that, aside from his courage making his battle with cancer public, the thing that was just so admirable about him is he made the game fun. Like, he remembered, you know, it was his job for 30-plus years, but he still just made the game fun. And he reminded everyone that, you know, it's a job, but you can enjoy the hell out of it. So, Sarah, do you want to add anything about Sags?
Oh, I agree with you. He always attacked the job and life with that same sort of vivacity, you know, and courage. Like you said, it just, you know, I can't imagine what he went through, and I feel like I would have not had that same energy to just keep coming at it, you know. So yeah. He's definitely an inspiration.
Yeah. So we're always Sager strong, and we want to pass our condolences to Casey, to Craig Jr., to the rest of the family. Our thoughts are with you guys right now, and I hope you know how much your dad meant to us as the NBA community. With that said. So the other big news of the week, obviously, if you were on Twitter anytime Wednesday night or Thursday morning, you saw that the NBA and the NBA Players Association has tentatively reached an agreement on a new collective bargaining agreement. The deadline for either side to opt out was today. They have pushed it back to mid-January so both sides can officially ratify the agreement. So I'm going to run through a number of the big changes and smaller changes, and then Sarah, as our CBA rookie on the on the podcast, is going to ask me questions kind of about what these changes mean, especially the impact of the newer provisions that were not in the old one. So there, the big new one is the designated veteran extension. It allows players with 1 year left on their deal to sign five-year extensions. Basically, in the current CBA, not the new one, we'll just refer to it as the old one from here on out, even though it is still active until January. In the old CBA, it basically made no financial sense to sign an extension because you could make more money in free agency. Now, this designated veteran extension, it makes more sense to actually sign an extension. The over 36 rule turned into an over 38 rule, which basically is going to benefit the likes of LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Chris Paul, all of whom, coincidentally, I'm sure, are on the NBPA Executive Council. There is a creation of two-way contracts, so the roster's size goes from 15 to 17. There are two spots now for these two-way deals where you can shuffle guys back and forth between the D-League and the main association and not have them count against your 15-man cap. The one-and-done rule stayed in place for now, but the league and the union are going to continue discussing alternatives, and could agree to change it at some point between now and the time the new agreement expires in 2023/2024. The preseason is capped at 6 games, according to Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press. As Mark Stein reported a few weeks ago, the season is also starting a week earlier. Both of these things are aimed at reducing back-to-backs and those 4-game and 5-night stretches, which lead to the DNP rest that we will talk about in a few minutes here. The other two, according to Mark Stein, the matching time on restricted free agencies dropped from 3 days to 2, so hopefully that will spur a little more action in restricted free agency. And rookie, veteran minimum, biannual, mid-level exception contracts are all raised by 45% is the figure that I've seen circulated most often. So we have yet to see a full copy of this agreement. I doubt we will until it officially gets ratified, but those are the big takeaways that we've seen so far. So, Sarah, what are the ones that you have questions about? Let me see if I could be a CBA guru for a few minutes here.
Well, I take it in the most simplistic terms that this designated vet thing should help teams hang on to their players rather than lose. It gives them an advantage, I guess.
Yes. So in theory, from what I've seen, I saw Howard Beck of Bleacher Report tweet this earlier, that teams get 2 of these rather than just 1, which is what they have coming off of rookie deals. So the way it works is if a guy has 1 year left on his deal, which will be the case with DeMarcus Cousins, Paul George, Russell Westbrook this coming summer.
Okay.
A team can sign him to a 5-year extension, which was not the case in the old CBA. So basically, it means either way, they're going to sign the same length deal, but because the team has their bird rights, they can get whatever. I assume we haven't heard anything either way, but I'm assuming the bird rights slash non-bird rights things apply, where if you have bird rights, you get a 7.5% annual raise versus a 4.5% if you're a non-bird. So basically, you're making more money if you re-sign with your current team rather than, you know, risk free agency. And
right.
So it basically gives your team, like, your team essentially, I want to say it like you basically become a free agent for your team a year earlier in terms of like the money that you can make. Like, okay, it allows your team to offer the contract that they will be able to offer in free agency the following
year. Okay.
1 year earlier. So that gives them the security. You know, if you don't sign it, that's probably a bad sign. That's probably like, okay, maybe it's time to start thinking about trading him perhaps, because now there is no financial advantage to waiting. So, you know, like, if a guy says he's in it for the money and he doesn't resign, then he's not in it for the money and he just wants to leave. So it definitely helps teams that have incumbent stars already. So as a Sixers fan, I'm very, very excited about this, because it should, knock on wood, ensure that Joel Embiid will remain in a Sixers uniform, hopefully for his entire career.
Now, does it hurt teams that have a stockpile of stars, or like the Warriors, or would it not matter because they're older?
I mean, I think, you know, a lot of those guys like Draymond and Klay Thompson are both signed for the next 3 years, I believe. So in the short term, it's not going to affect them all that much. And then Steph and KD are both, their contracts are up after this year anyway, so they're going to be free agents. I'm trying to think. I have to go digging into the salary books later to see if there's a team where there are like multiple stars are expiring after 2017-2018. I'll give you an example. If the Clippers, if this was in place this past summer,
right,
and they have, you know, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, both of whom are going to become free agents in the summer of 2017, the Clippers could have locked both of them up now, and that would have given them the security. You know, they wouldn't have this storyline hanging over their heads all year. Like, oh, God, is this the
time to blow it up?
Yeah.
Can we keep them? Right.
Right, okay. Right. So I think it will help teams that have these concurrent salaries, you know, superstars who have salaries that are, or contracts that are expiring at the same time.
Okay. And then the other big one, I guess, is the two-way deal with the D-League. So are you technically able to have up to 17 players on your actual roster then?
That's my understanding. I haven't seen full details of...
Right.
But so right now you have a maximum of 15, and if you're pushing a guy down to the D League and bringing him back up, pushing him down, bringing him back up, you have to keep a roster spot cleared. So again, right. Going back to the Sixers for an example, we have Timothy Luwawu, who's been bouncing back and forth. So the Sixers have had to keep a roster spot open for Luwawu whenever they do want to call him up. Now it sounds like next year they can fill out a roster of 15 guys, and then someone like Luwawu can bounce back and forth between the D-League and the NBA without affecting their other 15-man limit. The cool thing is, from what I saw, the salary that you earn if you're on this two-way contract depends on where you are. So it sounds like you make, I think I saw 75 grand if you're in the D-League, and then I assume your actual NBA salary once you're in the NBA. I'm not 100% sure of that. I also did see that you might just make the veteran's minimum, but I would assume like a first-round pick would make his actual salary. So don't quote me on that until we see the actual details. But from my understanding, it actually will help. I think it'll help promote sending young guys down and relying on the D League a little bit more, because it won't penalize you in terms of, you know, having to keep a roster spot clear. So like if you're desperate and you can, you know, you need bodies, you can bring your guy up, but otherwise you can keep him down there and it's not going to affect you either way.
That's really exciting as a Spurs fan, because I know, you know, we've had guys we've been interested in and excited about over the years that it is hard to keep them all in the system, you know, like who Keith brought up last podcast as his crush, Jermichael Green, is a guy who he was in our system and we just couldn't hang on to him. Perhaps this two-way deal helps you do that, though potentially not, because he clearly deserved a spot in the league and minutes. But yeah, like I'd love to still have him. But
yeah,
no, that's great. And what I wonder if / hope it will lead to at some point is, if I remember on one of those coaches roundtables on NBA TV, coaches brought up something that they'd like to see change is just being able to dress everybody who's on your roster too every game. So that would be nice. Even though, yeah, if you have technically 17 now, that's really hard to find minutes. But say you do have a game where you can get those guys in, that would be nice to be able to do that and not have them in street clothes.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have not seen anything either way about whether it changes like how many players you're allowed to dress, but hopefully we'll get more details in the days to come.
I don't think we're there yet, but
right, <one day. laughs> right. We got the big details leaked out from. So, I mean, you know, again, we haven't seen the full thing. If you guys are interested in the CBA and all that, Mark Stein, Adrian Wojnarowski, Kevin Pelton, Danny Laureau, Keith Smith, who was on our last podcast, is a great follow as well, and Eric Pincus on Twitter. All those guys are on top of this. Larry Kuhn as well, the author of the invaluable salary cap FAQ. So I'm sure once I saw him like begging for someone to leak him the full thing last night so we could get started on the new FAQ. But I'm sure once the full thing comes out, he will update the FAQ accordingly and all of us can pretend to be cap experts again. So, I mean, we mentioned the preseason being capped and the season starting a week earlier as an aspect of the CBA. Basically to reduce back-to-backs and four and fives. You know, the story behind that is what we've seen over the past few days and what we're going to see apparently on TNT tonight. So the controversy is that the Cleveland Cavaliers had back-to-back games against the Grizzlies. They were at home Tuesday, in Memphis Wednesday. They rested LeBron, Kyrie, and Love on the second night of that back-to-back. So, you know, there were people with signs saying, like, I spent $800 and I drove 4 hours to see LeBron and he's staying at home. Let's just say there was a lot of outrage over the DNP rest, which, Sarah, you're Greg Popovich, I would say, is the forefather of. So do you think the outrage is justified?
You know, I'm just really glad to see other teams creating outrage. And it's like, because for so long this was a Pop issue, and now, you know, he's somewhat, I would say, justified in that now more teams are doing it. Obviously, people have the right to feel however they feel. I mean, it does suck when you spend a lot of money and you come from, you know, say you don't live in an NBA city and you make it a whole event to go try to see a game, especially a generational player like LeBron. But, you know, I know we've talked about, well, what should the NBA do about it? And obviously they have the interest of the fans, but they also should be interested in the players' well-being. I just don't know how comfortable I am with the league having that type of control over what teams do. It's kind of that argument of federal government versus states' rights. You know, it's I don't know. I don't really want to see that because, you know, we've talked about that before, how much teams have at their fingertips to monitor every little thing, how far a player runs in a game, how the fastest speed he clocks in at, you know, they have all of that monitored. So I want to be able to trust them. Unfortunately, sometimes teams will make decisions that kind of push that trust that, you know, I think Kyrie sat out both games and he's 24. You know, so that, yeah, sometimes it blurs the lines. And if that keeps happening, I think, unfortunately, those discussions will have to be had. But it's great. I know that players, like I said, I think Tony Parker brought this up, what's happening finally in the CBA, like 4 years ago. Like, why can't we start the season a little earlier, cut down on preseason, cut down on back-to-backs? So I'm really glad that that's happening. And I think you kind of have to let next year play out and see how teams respond. And then you can come back and talk about what the league might have to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, first of all, we should just acknowledge, you know, they reached this agreement, but there's nothing prohibiting them from adding to the collective bargaining agreement, you know, during the 7 year period. So if they, you know, if they see 2 or 3 years down the line that these guys really shouldn't be playing 82 games and shouldn't be playing 38 minutes for 82 games, and the, like, the science says you are leading to overuse injuries, I think both sides would be open and willing to changing something. I think, you know, Mike D'Antoni, the Houston Rockets coach, gave some interesting comments where he basically suggested he would like to see the league get involved, but particularly in terms of making sure that teams don't rest their players in road games. So if you're gonna rest, do it for a home game. I think the optics of this particular situation were worse than usual because, you know, most times on a back-to-back, you're not playing the same team. So it's at least it's at least a little bit more understandable if you're resting a guy on the second night of a back-to-back. But in this case, it's like, all right, you're playing Memphis twice. You either let your home fans see LeBron or the Memphis fans, who Cleveland only plays once a year in Memphis, they get to see LeBron. Who do you prefer? And, you know, there's some argument like, well, if you're at home, they can go to their own beds, they can sleep afterward, they're going to get a better night's sleep. Then if they're on the road, they're in a hotel bed, or they have to fly back after the game and their body is fatigued from that. So, you know, I'm not saying that D'Antoni is necessarily right here, but I do think that would be kind of the place that I would focus on first. Like, if you are going to do these DNP rests, do them at home where your fans have 41 chances to see your players versus on a road game where they have one, maybe two chances. That said, again, if the science comes back and says, like, there is science already that says, like, for a dehydrated guy, getting on a plane afterward is not necessarily the best thing in the world. So, like, there are two sides to this equation, and it's definitely a tricky thing to juggle. So I think there's no perfect answer here, but if it means, like, I don't think any Cleveland fan in Memphis is going to be upset if they spent their $800, but that day of rest helped keep LeBron healthy and they go on to win a second title and beat the Warriors again. And, if it leads to a lengthy playoff run because these guys are well rested, that's the trade-off. So you just, I guess basically the moral of the story is be careful when you're buying NBA tickets because you can't be sure that you're actually going to see the star that you think you're going to see.
I was thinking, I don't think Philadelphia fans have seen Tim Duncan in the last like 3 or 4 years. Like he always was resting in Philly. It does. It sucks. But at the same time, we got him for 19 years probably because of those maintenance games. So
And Pop has said that's what started him on this maintenance path was the 2000 playoffs, where I think Tim had a knee problem, he said. And he said, well, if I want Tim Duncan for 19 years, I'm going to have to be a little more cautious with his minutes. And just to be clear, we're not talking about guys who are in a minutes restriction for health-related reason, like Embiid being on a 24-minute restriction for his foot or whatever. Like, that's very much a different scenario. That's not controversial. That just should happen. That's fine. It's literally just the DNP rest. No perfect answer, but I'm sure it will. This topic, this is not the last time we'll discuss this topic, although hopefully these changes to the NBA schedule next year will cut down on that a little bit. Morton's not here, so I can't troll him too hard, but I did want to shout out the Bulls Timberwolves game from Tuesday night, Tom Thibodeau's return to Chicago. It looked like a blowout for Chicago early. They got up as much as 21 points in the first half, and then I can only assume Tibbs had some words with the team at halftime. And basically, the Timberwolves looked like an entirely different team in the second half. Towns, he was only 6 of 21, but he finished plus 12. He had 16 points, 12 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 assists, 1 steal, and a 3. There's one play where he stole the ball and ran the court like a gazelle. Like, it did not compute that that man was 7 feet tall. Like, it's just, he remains, I mean, he's had, I don't want to say a disappointing year, but he hasn't, like, ascended to total world-dominating superstar status quite yet. Like, he's teasing at it, but he's not consistently there. But let's remember, he's, like, what, 21 years old? He's going to be one of the league's best players in a very short period. But Morton did say, he sent us an email before, he loved how Tibbs got his revenge and hated how the Bulls did not give him a video tribute. Quote, bastards. So there you go on that. I would advise anyone who hates themselves for liking the Bulls to check out Chris Herring's article on 538 about why the Bulls beat the best teams and lose to the worst, because that is something they've tended to do in recent years. Although they are on TNT tonight, so let's just say RIP to Milwaukee already. So before we go into our deep dives of the week, we have to touch on this next story. And Sarah, I think this is of particular interest to you. Matt Moore of CBS Sports the other day released this Kawhi-land article about how the Spurs D is worse with Kawhi Leonard on the floor than off. His theory is that teams are basically isolating wings against Kawhi on the weak side and removing him from the play, which leaves their opponents to play 4-on-4 against two minus defenders in Pau and Tony, particularly targeting them in pick and rolls. So, Sarah, have you noticed this as a trend?
I mean, they're definitely trying to pull Kawhi away from plays, and I mean, I can't blame them, but it is strange. I definitely would not have expected to see teams, essentially approaching it like football teams, you know. I also, I think Matt's article was great. It was, you know, well researched. He had videos. Coach Nick did a similar video afterward. I mean, you can see it happening. I don't know that I think teams will continue to do it, especially postseason. You know, say that the Spurs made it to a matchup with the Warriors or the Cavaliers. Are they going to just decide to take Kevin Durant or LeBron out of the game? I don't think teams are going to do that, and I would think, actually, in a way, that would benefit the Spurs if they did. But it's weird. I mean, and I don't think you can blame Kawhi. He's definitely, I've seen him, and I'll probably post some video eventually of the times when he's been able to come flying from wherever he has been hidden and come inside and help out. He did so last night against the Celtics at one point. He's trying, but I think, you know, it comes down to, like you mentioned, Powell, Tony, they're going to have to be better, or they're going to have to play fewer minutes if that continues. Because, you know, you can't have those gaping holes that, you know, Kawhi and even Danny, trying their hardest, cannot make up for. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. I as you mentioned, Coach Nick had a good video on this as well, and he showed a lot of the same footage that Matt talked about, particularly with Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins. And it did seem, you know, both Coach Nick and Matt Moore were basically like, I'm not sure that the coaches are like deliberately game planning and saying like, Jimmy just stayed in the quarter for 48 minutes. Cause you know, they have an offense, they have a set system. Like they're not going to totally deviate from that. But that said, there was a play, especially in Nick's video, where you see Robin Lopez goes to set a screen for him, and Jimmy like points at him. Is like, no, go away, go away, go. Like, I don't like, just do not come near me. Kawhi's on me. Just let the play go. And they did score on that, I believe. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought up that the Spurs Celtics game last night, because I did notice a couple instances where Kawhi seemed like he was eager to play some help defense. And I'm wondering. I mean, you know, these guys are all on the internet. Like, I'm sure he has seen this this article, and I'm sure people are talking about it around him. So I'm wondering how that affects him and the Spurs moving forward.
I think he just loves to defend, too. Like, I think he's always looking to get in on the play, and when he's consistently out of it, I think it, if anything, for teams, I think it somewhat helps them that I think it does frustrate him a little bit that, you know, to be not involved in the defensive plays over and over. At times, he will kind of turn his head, and you can catch him lose sight of his guy for just a second, and they're able to be effective cutting from the weak side. And what's interesting about it is it might be, like we've always considered teams that don't have a strong small forward, you know, not, I mean, let's face it, the top teams in the league do have that right now. You know, it was the Thunder when they had Durant. Now, of course, the Warriors are even stronger with him. LeBron, obviously, in the Cavs, the Spurs, PG, you know, small forward. It's one of the premier positions in the league. But what's interesting, and the articles have made me think about now, you know, perhaps that's one reason that the Clippers have always kind of matched well with the Spurs is they kind of take Kawhi out of that equation because that's like the one position they haven't had a really strong starter at, a small forward. But maybe that helps you to attack the Spurs if you can either pull Kawhi out on Mbah Mute or in the past Matt Barnes. And then Matt Barnes was also really good at the weak side cuts. So, you know, if Kawhi is busy trying to help and he loses sight, I mean, that maybe that's a good way to attack them. But I don't know. don't know. I think we'll see.
Yeah, that's a very interesting theory about the Clippers. And I think you might be onto something there because I'm kind of mad you don't have any respect for Wesley Johnson, but I guess. Oh, wait, he went to Syracuse. I don't either. Good point. I do want to ask, do you think this, adversely affects his Kawhi's Defensive Player of the Year campaign, as I don't want to super troll you, but you did have him as your first quarter MVP, or sorry, DPOY. Our last podcast.
You saw me, I did that too. We had an email chain on B-Ball Breakdown, and I said, yeah, give me Kawhi all day, every day, forever and ever, amen.
Yeah.
So obviously it doesn't affect me, but I think it does. Normal people, yeah. I think people are not going to have him on the top of their list because there's just been so much buzz about the numbers so far being so head-scratchingly bad. Unfortunately, I think that is going to affect. Hopefully, though, I mean, there's a lot of time to turn it around. But,
yes.
But, I think that benefits a guy like Draymond, too, who is in the news a lot and, you know, telling people that he wants the award and he's making these clutch plays. But I tell you right now, I will be the one when he inevitably wins that will be out there saltily tweeting the plays where I think he gets a different whistle than some other guys get. And
yeah.
We can talk about that more later.
Yeah. I'm very excited for that. As I said last time, he deserves it, if only because he's playing defense on the NBA as well, because he keeps kicking people in the junk and not getting suspended for it. So there you go. We are now going to move into a few deep dives. We're going to start with the Indiana Pacers, who have been consistently underwhelming. They are only a half game ahead of the Bucks and the Hawks for the East's number 8 seed. They are 13-13 overall. They just lost to the Miami Heat. They have beaten the Clippers twice. They beat the Cavs and the OKC Thunder, but they have lost to Brooklyn. They've lost to Phoenix, they've lost to Dallas, they've lost to Miami, and they've lost to Philly, all of which are, let's be real, those are probably the five worst teams in the league. Mm-hmm. They are 17th in offensive rating and 18th in defensive rating, which basically suggests they're a mediocre team. At best, they're probably headed for a first-round exit. So that leads to the question. You know, Larry Bird, for a number of years now, has been clamoring to get this fast-paced, pace-and-space team. And over the offseason, he trades George Hill and he brings in Jeff Teague. He trades the number 20 pick. He brings in Thaddeus Young. Sarah, do you think that big offseason overhaul was a mistake?
Well, it certainly hasn't paid off, has it? We've joked, or, you know, we didn't come up with it, but certainly have passed that around that they've lost the George Hill trade twice.
Yes.
I don't want to pile on Jeff Teague, but so far that's probably one of their biggest problem areas. You know, you can't have your starting point guard shooting, 42% and 32 from three? That's going to put you behind the eight ball quite a bit. And I just think, you know, George was one of those guys who was kind of adept at, he didn't need the ball a lot and he didn't need a lot of shots. He kind of be a controller and then let Paul George shine a little bit more. And I just think that maybe that is taking time to mesh for Jeff Teague. It's a different situation. He kind of more ran the show in Atlanta. So maybe that's a little bit of a struggle. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. And then you said before the season even started that they weren't going to defend very well, and that has been the case as well. So those are big problem areas.
Yeah, I'd like to shout out Chris Axman, the almighty baller, for the almighty prophet, because, again, we mentioned this, I think, on our division preview for the Central. You know, I talked myself into this offseason overhaul working, and I was like, yeah, they're gonna score all the time. And then Chris was like, hey, but they're gonna suck on defense. And I was like, you know what, you might be onto something here. I mean, Paul George and Miles Turner are plus defenders, and Miles Turner still looks great, still having a breakout year. But yeah, I mean, their defense has really struggled. And I want to give a shout out to Jared Dubin, who wrote a thing about the Pacers 2 weeks ago for the Step Back on Fansided. And at the time, they were just outside of the top 10 in defensive rating. But he even said then, He called it a house of cards that's in danger of collapsing fairly soon. So, props to Jared for predicting exactly what would unfold over the next 2 weeks. He noted that teams were basically just shooting below average from 3-point range against them, but it wasn't anything they were doing. It's just like teams were getting unlucky and shooting poorly against them, and that was likely to regress to the mean in the coming weeks, which it seems like it has. So, at this point, I'm not going to say Bird, it's not like he broke up a perennial contender anyway. Like, it's been a couple of years since they had that David West, Roy Hibbert, Lance Stephenson when he was playing well, that core. But the early returns are not great for Indiana. So I think, it's something to monitor moving forward, because it would not surprise me. Maybe they get a little active on the trade market come the trade deadline if they decide they screwed up and need a little bit more defense. The next team we're going to talk about here is the Charlotte Hornets. So they are currently riding a 3-game losing streak, including a ugly blowout loss to the aforementioned Pacers. But aside from that, prior to that, they were one of the pleasant early season surprises. Then again, if you look who they've beaten, I'm going to run through this quickly. Milwaukee, Miami, Philly, Brooklyn, Indiana, Utah, Minnesota, Atlanta, New York, Dallas twice, Orlando, Memphis, and Detroit. There really isn't a marquee victory in there. I guess you could argue Utah or maybe the Knicks, maybe Memphis, but no Cavs, no Warriors, no Clippers, no Spurs, etc., etc. Kemba's playing at an all-star level. But Nick Batum is shooting under 40% from the field. And Marvin Williams has been a trouble spot as well. He had a career year last year, kind of reverted to the mean this year. I want to relay some comments from Steve Clifford, their head coach, on Wednesday. So after losing to the Washington Wizards, 109-106, I'm going to read this from Rick Bonnell of the Charlotte Observer. Rick said Clifford used the word physicality in just about every sentence of a severe critique of his team's play. And this is a quote from Clifford: "The game came down to physical play. If guys aren't willing to be more physical, we'll be an up and down team. We'll struggle to make the playoffs. If we want to play with the physicality we choose to at times, we have a chance to be a good team." So, Sarah, what do you think's going on with the Hornets? Do you think it just comes down to physicality, or should Hornets fans be worried here? Are they in danger of missing the playoffs, or do you think they're still going to be comfortably in by season's end?
I don't think they should be worried because I still think they have a good team and a good chance to make the playoffs out in the East. I think Clifford understands that they're going to have to be a very good defensive team in order to get in because they are average offensively. And that was something I was worried about in the beginning, which is why I kind of undersold them because I just didn't see how they were going to score. But they've been pretty decent from 3-point range, and Kemba's been incredible, like you said, and he's got to be. He really does, especially with, Batum not really packing a lot of scoring punch. But that they got to hang their hat on defense. They're like the number one defensive rebounding team, which is big, and that's where they're going to compete. Because, yeah, they can't score with the best, so they're going to have to try to hold them down a little bit. So I think that's why all the emphasis on physicality in his dressing down of the team. But yeah, I think, like you said, when they end up playing the big dogs, and we kind of have to still wait and see what's going to happen with that. I think they can compete as long as they defend well. And they're going to have to hit a few threes. But we'll have to see as far as that. But yeah, I still think they're going to be in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, they've got we'll start to see how they fare against the big dogs on Friday night. They've got a date with Boston in Boston. They've also got Atlanta on Saturday. They have the Bulls right before Christmas. They have Cleveland on New Year's Eve. And then they've got a tough, a brutal start to 2017 with Chicago, OKC, Detroit, San Antonio, and Houston. So we're going to learn a lot about this Hornets club in the next month to see just how far they have to go, or whether this is just a, you know, the blip in an otherwise promising season for them. I think your point about them defensively is totally right. I mean, they're seventh right now in terms of defensive rating, which they absolutely need to stay in the top 10 if they're going to have a chance of making the playoffs. Because, you know, as you mentioned, they have Kemba, but no other consistent source of offense. You know, Batum, I mentioned earlier, shooting under 40%. Marvin Williams, 35.2. Frank Kaminsky, 37.6. Ramon Sessions, 38.9. So they're just not getting, they need that like second reliable scorer.
Yeah.
And Batum is supposed to be that guy, I think. But, you know, this is where you're seeing them miss Jeremy Lin, Courtney Lee coming off the, Al Jefferson even coming off the bench. You know, we mentioned, I think all three of us in our preseason preview of Charlotte was a little bit concerned about, you know, we figured they would be good. We figured getting MKG back would be good, and he's played pretty well. But we were worried that that's a lot of offense that you have to replace off the bench, and they haven't really found someone to do that yet. So, you know, Marco Bellinelli is playing well for them. I think that could be a source of more moving forward. We'll just have to wait and see. You know, hopefully in the coming weeks they can get Kemba some help, because he's been playing. I mean, if he doesn't make the All-Star team this year, it is a crime against humanity. So he's been playing really well. Got to hope he keeps it up. But if I'm a Charlotte fan, I am not too worried right now, just because, I mean, it's the same story. Both, I mean, more so in the West than the East. Like, the West, there's already starting to be some considerable separation between playoff teams and lottery teams. But in the East, I mean, there are really only 10 teams, unless Washington can get it together, that you have to worry about for a playoff spot. Like, Orlando, Miami, Brooklyn, Philly, they're not going to make it. So I have a feeling Charlotte can hold off at least, you know, three of Detroit, Indiana, Atlanta, Milwaukee, and Washington. But we will see. As we mentioned, they've got a hell of a schedule coming up. So the last team we want to touch on this week are the Portland Trailblazers. They went 1-4 on their recent five-game road trip, including four straight losses, before just beating down OKC at home on Tuesday. Evan Turner, who we maligned a lot earlier in this season, he has been playing better as of late, relatively speaking. Dame and CJ are both putting up career scoring numbers, and Mo Harkless is really playing well as a glue guy. But all of that said, they're only 13-14, which is good for eighth in the West. I mentioned, you know, a minute ago, they are beginning to open some separation in terms of the playoff race. I think they have a 3-game lead on the next closest team, the Sacramento Kings and the Denver Nuggets. But that's more a factor of Sacramento and Denver and all of those teams. You know, the Lakers were up there early, but they've lost 8 straight. You know, Sacramento's 3-7 in their last 10. Denver's 3-7 in their last 10. Lakers are 1-9. That's not a credit to the Trailblazers, basically. It's just the West Lotto teams are starting to hold to form. So, Sarah, why do you think the Blazers have struggled as much as they have, and what is the cure?
Well, you passed along an article by Josh Martin from Bleacher Report, and in it there was a Terry Stotts quote, and he said, "I think that other teams are probably better prepared for us than last year at this time, and we're fighting through some of that." And I really think that's a big part of it. You know, last year, we remember that CJ McCollum was kind of a surprise. No one expected him to be as transcendent as he was. Now people are ready for that, and they know that the Blazers have kind of this two-headed snake in Dame and CJ, and they're ready for that. And there's, you know, there's not a lot else there. And I think, you know, their big problems are they don't have a great bench. They're not very good defensively at all, and that's, you know, putting it nicely. And they haven't been good in the clutch because people know what they're going to. So, I mean, I think they talked about thinking that coming into the year, not having a lot of turnover was going to help them build on last year. And I don't think that's happened because they probably needed to add a little bit of something. Now, you know, Azili, I think, would have helped. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, has just been hurt. But, you know, they needed that. They need some other piece because there's just not enough right now. We're still just trying to ride Dame and CJ. I think it's a little unfair to have expected them to really build on what they did last year because last year was a surprise. You know, they probably shouldn't have been able to do that, but right. They definitely, there's no reason to expect them to be any better than that, really. And certainly now that people are prepared for them, there's even a little bit of regression.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And Morton said the same thing when he emailed us. He said, you know, teams have them scouted now. The element of surprise is gone. So that's leading to, you know, their struggles a little bit. I mean, I'm glad you shouted out this Josh Martin article. Check it out on Bleacher Report. He basically asked why they haven't taken that next step. And he pointed out, as you mentioned, their defensive rating slipped from 20th last year to 28th this year. Their clutch time net rating technically is up. It was minus 2.9 last year and minus 2.3 this year, but that in terms of its league-wide rank is down. And then, yeah, their bench scoring dropped off by almost 4 points a game, which, given the addition of Evan Turner, another year of Alan Crabb, you would not have expected that. The bench really needs to be one of the strong points for this Portland team. Because, you know, Dame and CJ can't do it all. And I think that's when they did do it all, basically, mm-hmm. for 2 months last year. And they got really hot and rode into the playoffs on that hot streak. And then, you know, caught a Clippers team that had a limping around Blake Griffin. And then Blake got re-injured, so they advanced to the second round. You know, I don't think that the Blazers were as good as their record indicated last year. Mm-hmm. I think this is more in line with what they are as a team right now. They are still really young. Like, as Josh pointed out, their major old veterans are Turner, who's 28, Ed Davis, who's 27, and then Plumlee, Aminu, and Lillard, who are all 26. I think Azili is also 27 or 28, but he hasn't played the whole year. He's got some knee issues. So, like, they don't have that Gerald Henderson that they had 2 years ago. So, you know, I'm not sure that I think they're going to make the playoffs. I did not have them as a playoff team coming into the year because I had more faith in Dallas. Whoops, my bad. I mean, it just seems like unless they completely fall apart, the other lottery-bound teams in the West, barring a complete reversal of fortune from the Lakers, you know, it seems like we basically already set in terms of West playoff teams. Now we're just jostling for seeds. That said, you know, look at the top seven in the West. You got Golden State, San Antonio, Clippers, Rockets, Grizzlies, Jazz, Thunder. The only team I'm not scared of to draw as a first round opponent would be the Blazers. Like if I'm Golden State, I'm trying really hard to hold on to that number one seed, not only for home court advantage in the first round, but because I don't want to see Russell Westbrook as a seventh seed, or I don't want to see this Jazz team, which ranks third in defensive rating in the first round. I don't want to see Memphis fall to the eight. So I'm not going to say that Portland is guaranteed to get knocked out in the first round, but if I had to pick, you know, looking at the matchups today, if I had to pick one team that I thought was not going to make it, it would be Portland. That said, you know, they've got a lot of talent. Now it's just a matter of, it might be a matter of consolidating it. And Josh suggested that in his article. Andrew Sharp of Sports Illustrated as well had a recent piece about how he's like, let's get Nerlens Noel to Portland. And he suggested Allen Crabbe and a protected first round pick for New Orleans, which I wanted to hit the okay button on my computer as fast as possible. Like, yes, 100 times. Yes, I will. That is so much more than I am expecting for New Orleans at this point. As a side note, Woj, I think it was Woj or someone tweeted the other day that they were on a podcast, and I think it was Woj, and they said basically teams are calling about New Orleans and are not liking what they hear about his work ethic, et cetera, and his attitude. So that doesn't have me hopeful for getting Allen Crabbe at a first round pick, but it could be just a matter of, you know, moving. They have a surplus of guards and forwards now. I think Sharp said, like, if they trade Turner back to Philadelphia, Hinkie's army is going to revolt. He is not wrong. So it probably would have to take Crabbe, but I would frankly expect the first round pick to be coming from Philly rather than from Portland. I don't think that would be, I think Portland would be giving up a lot if they give up Crabbe and a first round pick for New Orleans, who can leave if he wants to at the end of the year. So let's now turn to our Where Amazing Happens segment, because Sarah, something amazing's happening on Sunday and you're going to be there in person.
Yep.
Tim Duncan's retirement ceremony is on Sunday. First, you want to just gloat for a minute about getting to be there in person?
No, I just still feel really fortunate. Like I said, it was a complete freak of the scheduling, the ticketing, however it worked. I would not be going. I think it's pretty safe to say if that hadn't happened, because the prices shot way up. So, yeah, I just got lucky. But my mother, who will be going with me the other day, said she's a little worried that, you know, the ceremony will start and she'll look over and I won't be there, and all of a sudden I'll be on the floor hanging on to the jersey so they can't raise it. It's like, no, you might need this still. How about we just hang on to it? And she probably shouldn't have given me the idea, because that hadn't occurred to me.
Yeah. But
no, it's going to be interesting. I look forward to talking with you all after it happens. I don't think I'm in any way prepared, but I'm not thinking about it. You know, I'm just going to go in and then it's all going to hit me. And I think they talked to Manu at practice the other day about, you know, do you expect him to get emotional? And he said, well, yeah, but, you know, I guess it depends on how you imagine Tim emotional right. would be, you know, how's right. that going to look? But that also I hadn't thought about. And if that happens, God help me. I can't even imagine dealing with that. But I look forward to it. Somewhat. Like I said, my mom doesn't want to go because she said that'll make it real. It's very real already.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. She told me this before the podcast started. And I was like, well, what? The last 2 months he's just been injured? Like, what's going on? He's not. But then he did come back this week to play Pau Gasol at practice one-on-one. So there's still hope that maybe he's going to just don the jersey one more time at halftime, come out in the second half, lead them to glory, and then go take a shower and get his jersey retired. Who knows?
Could happen.
Yeah, but
I love that he's working with Pau, though. I do.
Yeah.
They mentioned during the, I think, was it the local broadcast or the ESPN one last night? I really can't remember, but that, you know, I think a lot of people thought that after he retired, we'd never see him again.
Right.
He'd just disappear. And I somewhat thought that as well. I mean, I thought he might be around the team, but I didn't think we'd hear anything about him. But it's nice that he's been in there working. I was joking. I'd like to see them out, not in the gym, but out in the yard at the practice facility, and have Pau in like this torn up old sweatsuit and Tim sitting there with a chicken. He said, all right, now you're gonna chase this chicken, Pau. I'd be like, no, I don't think I want to do that. Tim'd be like, first of all, you are, because I said so. Second of all, if you catch this chicken, you can defend the pick and roll. Like, I just so want to see that happen.
Oh my god!
But I don't think it's gonna happen. But oh. I'll take a little one-on-one with Tim defending Pau. I can live for that.
Morton is gonna die when he hears that. That's fantastic. I would love to know what the score was if they would play like a one-on-one scrimmage. Like,
They did Tim on defense only, and
Oh.
but I think he got a point if he stopped Powell, and Powell got a point if he scored. And Powell said that it was tied if you want to take him at his word on that.
I'm sure it was. That's like Donald Trump saying it was tied.
Jeez.
That is it's just as believable.
Poor
Okay.
pal.
Yeah. We need to, I feel like the Westbrook triple double tracker might have been a 1 week feature as we debuted it last week, and he promptly went and did not get a triple double in his
This
next
is
two
your
games.
fault.
It really is.
Yeah.
And now there's a story on ESPN.com about how he's annoyed with the triple double talk. So sorry, Russ. Don't take it out on my fantasy team,
He's
please. Just
perpetually annoyed, though, so it's okay.
right. There is that. I feel like we can't really we can't blame the triple double talk for
Yeah.
that. I think
But I don't
that's
blame him. Like, I wouldn't want to hear about it all the time either. Like, we
yeah.
could talk about it because, of course, we're going to talk about it, but I don't think he needs to be asked about it constantly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as we mentioned last time, he needs to put up those huge numbers. It's not like he's just stat stuffing. Like his team really actually genuinely needs him to put up close to a triple double, if not a triple double, to stay afloat in the playoff race. So here's
This
hoping
is
he
true.
starts a new streak soon. But if he does, we will not talk about it. We will briefly mention it and move on. So the last thing in our Where Amazing Happens this week, Michael Jordan was in the news for a couple different stories. First, ESPN.com's J.A. Adande had a story about him on the set of Space Jam, where he apparently just used to dominate people in pickup games while listening to D'Angelo, because I guess that album came out that summer. So just soak in that mental image there for a second. Also, Rip Hamilton was on The Jump with Rachel Nichols, and he told this story about how he and Michael were on the 2001-2002 Washington Wizards, and Rip came up to him at some point and was like, "Hey, MJ, it would be really cool like to be part of the Jordan brand." And Michael said back, "Yeah, you have to earn that. Those are for your all-stars." So
Yeah,
that
that
is
this is
Michael Jordan.
cold-blooded.
Yeah.
Yeah, like supposedly he came up and said, "Yeah, you're not good enough basically to wear my shoes. It's an all-star shoe."
Right. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Even though it's his own teammate. Like, that just goes to show you that his homicidal competitiveness did
Seems
not.
unnecessary. Yeah.
Yeah. Did
Why?
not
It's friendly
stay.
fire. Why are you spraying it, Rip? Leave him alone.
Right. Just like, be like, yeah, okay, talk to me in a few years. Like, there's a nicer way to go about that. But having just read Boys to Men by Jonathan Abrams, has a lot of MJ and Kwame Brown talk.
Oh boy.
And let's just say the words that MJ said to Kwame Brown are not okay in 2016.
I bet.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there was one passage in particular that I will not say on this podcast for fear of lightning striking me down from the sky. Let's just say
Oh,
that
wow.
much. Yeah, so if you have not read that book, check out Jonathan Abrams. It's really good stuff. And for those interested in the one and done era, especially with this one and done rule still being debated, that's a really good read. But it also contains just some scorching Michael Jordan insults. I do not blame Kwame from flaming out of the league after being on the receiving end of that. But Morton would like to say that Michael Jordan is a badass and he will forever love him deeply. So there you go. Imagine Morton saying that. So now let's finish things up with our crush segment. And Sarah, I know you're excited for this one. Fire away. Who's your crush of the week?
You're right. My crush is a certain big man who plays in Denver. But before we move off from Amazing, I think we should at least mention not only Larry Nance's Statue of Liberty
Oh,
dunk
God.
last night,
Yes.
but Aaron Gordon threw one behind his head, and I almost feel like we should debate which one's more amazing because Larry Nance went after an insane amount of contact. He continued to go up, which I don't understand how you do that. But then I also don't understand how, when you're moving backwards and the rim is behind you, like if I could jump that high, I would absolutely hit my head on the rim and throw the ball over the other side of the rim, like, guaranteed. Yeah, like, right. How did he know where the rim was?
Yeah.
So, that's incredible. And then Kawhi last night had the, you see, he did, like, a freaking Dr. J, Jordan, midair. I think he kind of looked like he wanted to go for the dunk, but then I think it was Amir Johnson came up and kind of met him, and so he turned it into some kind of looping finger roll. It's like, oh my god, just the athleticism in this league is incredible.
Yeah, just a perpetual reminder that we are blessed to watch these guys today, because they're all freaks of nature. But as to your, so you, can you take a side in this Aaron Gordon, Larry Nance debate?
Man, it's so hard. I think I gotta go the behind the head thing, because I'm still amazed at his spatial awareness on that one.
Right. The not giving yourself a concussion definitely gives you points there. But I'll be a contrarian, and I'll take Larry Nance, because there was a picture, there was like a still shot of him, and it was like Brook Lopez, who is 7 feet tall, and he's jumping, and then Larry Nance is like 4 feet above him. Which is like, I'm like a white Jewish guy, so I can jump maybe 2 feet. Like, Larry Nance might have jumped my height last night. So I think because I knew Aaron Gordon, you know, we saw him last year in the dunk contest. We knew he was capable of that kind of stuff. It's cool to see it in game. Larry Nance, I had no idea he could do that. So that was that was
amazing.
That was a nice wake up call. So good call on adding that into the Where Amazing Happens segment, because
you gotta get him in a contest, right?
Yeah.
Lockdown for sure happening.
I would assume if it was just LaVine, Aaron Gordon, and Larry Nance, I'm good with that. Throw in Russ just because he's just so violent. Yeah. But I don't know you. But like just those three guys perpetually. We don't even like just
for sure. Yeah.
Just every year.
I was worried that they're gonna try to take Aaron Gordon out because you know they'd like to change it up. No. Keep him in.
Yeah.
Forever.
Right. Him and LaVine just need to, like, permanently, I'm sorry, I know you want the All-Star break, like, it's a nice week-long vacation. Nah. You guys owe it to the NBA community as a whole, having suffered through enough bad dunk contests in the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Let's enjoy it while we can.
Exactly. All right. So, I'll get back to the my crush. Of course, I picked Nikola Jokic.
Yes.
Their last game was a super disappointing loss to the Mavericks, but he had 27 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 block, 1 turnover, was 10 of 12 in 26 minutes.
Ugh.
So I feel like we gotta find some more minutes for Jokic. he averaged 18, 9.2 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 67% from the field over his last 4 games, so... And like we said, he's doing this in limited minutes. He makes the team better when he's on the floor. It's not like he's a stat stuffer too. That's like empty stats, and he's out there for himself. He's a good passer. He's gonna make the game and the team flow better. So I would just love to see him on the floor more.
Yeah. I think I'd say every Nuggets fan shares that sentiment, because I think it's very evident that Jokic and Jamal Murray are the future of that franchise, and they're stuck. We mentioned in a recent podcast how they're kind of stuck in this, you know, weird state of limbo because they've got so many veterans and they got a bunch of young guys who need minutes too. So here's hoping they settle on a direction, maybe pull off a consolidation trade, you know, move Nurkic or move Farid or someone, and find a way to get Jokic in the lineup, because he was a second half superstar after the All-Star break last year. And you know, he struggled in the early going, playing in that Jokic lineup. But you know, hopefully they can figure out a way to get him going again.
It's tough with the Moutier situation.
Yes,
kind of like we talked about the Pacers. I mean, it's different because Jeff Teague is at least a known commodity. But you know, when you're getting that type of play from that position, it's rough. I don't know if you saw, somebody tweeted, like I assume some fan tweeted, Wilson Chandler, I think, recently, said, you gotta talk to Mike Malone. There's no reason you Murray and Jokic should not be starting. And Chandler like retweeted it, but said, "Over my head, man. This not my job." But obviously gave it air. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting
things going on in Denver.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. We'll keep an eye on Wilson Chandler's Twitter feed for hopefully some late breaking updates in terms of starting lineup changes there. So my crush of the week is Kyle O'Quinn of the New York Knicks. I think it was Dan Favell of Bleacher Report who tweeted this, and he said something along the lines of like, it brings him such great pleasure to watch Kyle O'Quinn because now Joakim Noah, the last 3.5 years of his deal, look even worse in retrospect. So O'Quinn, in his last 6 games, 12.7 points, 10.2 rebounds, 1.7 blocks in 23.4 minutes per game, shooting almost 65% from the field. Against Phoenix the other night, he had 22 points and 14 rebounds. Against the Timberwolves at the beginning of the month, 20 points, 13 rebounds, 2 blocks in 31 minutes. So, dude is playing insanely well and is giving the Knicks a big boost. They've won 4 of those 6 games that he's played. So we'll see if he can keep it up. Hopefully he can. Hopefully, for the sake of Knicks fans and Bulls fans who remain loyal to Noah, hopefully he can get going a little bit more. But if not for a contract, I think there would soon be a question of should Mr. O'Quinn be starting over Joakim Noah. So we will see how that plays out in the coming weeks, but good to see that they're getting productive play out of O'Quinn. And also just shout out to Kristaps for being a freaking monster as of late. Yeah. Just, I'm so, I enjoy making fun of the Knicks because they're the Knicks and they do a lot of stupid things. But it seems like after that early season swoon, they're like, you know what? We need to get Kristaps the ball a lot. And they're doing it. And now he is a monster. So, congrats, Knicks. Like, way to not take 3 years to figure that out. I'm glad it only took about 10 games.
Very well done.
So, that is going to do it for this week on the NBA podcast. Again, be sure to check us out on Twitter at the NBA pod, where you can find all 3 of our Twitter handles as well. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, download, leave us some reviews. We'd love to hear your feedback. And check out FanRag Sports at FanRag Sports on Twitter. And then the NBA channel is at FanRagNBA. Again, passing our condolences to the Sager family. Our thoughts are with them at this time. Check out, I'm sure the TNT broadcast is going to have a great tribute tonight to a very beloved man. So, sorry to be the bearer of bad news in that regard. Hope you enjoyed the CBA talk. Otherwise, Sarah, as always, it was great talking to you.
You too.
All right, take care.